Good evening. So our topic tonight was a special request. It was made a few weeks ago, and we thought it would be appropriate for this week's parsha, or one of this week's parshias, so we held off till tonight. It actually has a chukas connection also, so I can actually throw that in a little bit later. We'll make a little bit of a chukas connection. Just realized that we can make a chukas connection too. But we'll start. It has a much clearer Balak connection. And that is the topic of magic and sorcery. And that has, you know, it has a general connection, which is certainly apparent, and even a very specific pasuk connection, which we'll come to. And let's try to get a little bit of a perspective about the halachic issues and concepts that are relevant. So there is, first of all, a general notion, which may or may not be a specific mitzvah saseh. The concepts are addressed largely in Parsha Shoftim, elsewhere in the Torah as well, but in Parsha Shoftim there is a collection of psukim that are relevant, and among them is the pasuk that's phrased in a more general sense and a positive sense that shouldn't say nobody's perfect, because you must be perfect, says the Torah, Tomim tiyam Hashem alokecha, you must be perfect. And Rashi interprets that, Hisalech imo b'tmimus, that you shall walk perfectly with God, V'leisach kor achar asidus, and you shouldn't try to see the future. And the Gemara Maseches Pesachim, Adav Kuf Yugimel Mebeis, understands from this pasuk that how do you know that a person shouldn't try to inquire into astrology, because of this idea of Tamim Tia Meshem Elokecha. The Malbim, commenting on the pasuk, understands that the name of Elokim that's referred to by Elokecha, that teaches about the notion that God and the Jewish people have to be connected, have to be cleaving together. And so the notion of Tamim, perfection, is that your heart cannot be divided, cannot be shared with anybody else, and you should only have a connection to God. So if you're going to try to consult anybody else outside of God and try to find out what the future is going to bring, you're going to be in violation of this. And the Shulchan Aruch Paskins in Yeridea Kufayin Tes, in the beginning, that one should not consult astrologers or lotteries. We'll talk about that a little bit. Talks about garolos. And the Ramah adds that is because of the phrasing in the Torah, Tamim Tiyam Hashem Elokecha. And he adds, V'kol Shekein, says the Ramah, to also lishol b'kosmim nachshim v'chashvim. So we have to talk about what all that means. And the Shach adds that the source for the Ramah, you might think that that's from the Psukim in Shoftim, which we'll talk about, but he also notes it's a Trumas Hadashin. And the Trumas Hadashin specifically says that the Achola, who is going to try to consult sorcerers and magicians to address his illness, so not only is he in violation of an Asay, that person is in violation of an Asay of Tam Tia, as the Rambam writes. And that the implication is there that it is specifically this Isra Asay rather than a actual Isser. And the Rambam that he's referring to is the Rambam in Hilchos Avodah Zarah in Parakit Aleph, Halacha Tazayin, where he brings the Isurim of Menachesh and Kosem and Onem and Machashif that we will talk about. And there he expresses, the Rambam expresses his very often cited opinion that all of those concepts, all of the prohibitions that the Torah has in Parsha Shoftim, which we haven't defined any of them yet, we'll have to try to do that a little bit, but all of the prohibitions of Nechush and Kishuf and the like, why are they prohibited? Because they are all phony. And they're all divrei sheker v'chazov. They have no meaning to them. And it's not right for Yisrael, who are chacham mechukamim, who are the wisest of the wise, that they should be involved in these havalim, and that they should think that they have any meaning to them. And How do you know that that's not fitting? Because of this week's Parsha, because of Parsha's Balak, where the Torah tells us, Kilei Nachash B'Yakov L'Kotzim B'Yisrael. This is not something which is to be found among the Jewish people. And so he adds, the Rambam, that anyone who thinks that this is something which has effectiveness to it and has meaning to it, but the Torah prohibits us from using it, so that is a mistake. And that's what the Torah instructs us in Tamim Tiyam Hashem Elokecha. So it sounds like a person who tries to find out what these things would have to tell him, so that he wouldn't be in violation of the Yisurim per se, but that would be a violation of this Isser Asay of Tamim Tiyam Hashem Elokecha. And the Marashal has a tshuva about this, that based on the Rambam's Svara, that Tam Tia is not an Isser, but just a general drasha, and not even counted specifically as its own mitzvah saseh, but just this general value to follow God with tmimus, and that this is the basic emuna a person is supposed to have and to understand that all of these activities are worthless and meaningless and not proper for a Jew to be involved in. And the Sefer Megillas Esther, one of the commentaries on the Rambam, the Sefer HaMitzvos, that he writes that the reason the Rambam didn't count it separately is because he sees it as an Azhara Kolelis on all the Lavin. And that the Lavin that the Rambam does count, so he sees this as a general Azhara regarding all that, and that's why he doesn't count it separately. And the Ramban, so in his extra Mitzvah Saseh, Mitzvah Ches, he does count it. The mitzvah that we should have our hearts be perfect with God, Shliyos Levavenu Tamim Mimo Yisala, as the Pasuk says, Tam Tia, and that the nature of that mitzvah is to Niachei Levavenu Elav Levada Yisbarach, that we should focus our hearts only on God, Shniachei Levavenu Elav Levada Yisbarach, that we should be focused only on Him, and that we should believe that only God alone, Ose Kol V'Hu HaYodei Amitas Kol Asa, and He's the one who knows, and that we're only turned to Him, and we're not going to look to any other powers and to put our faith in them. And if we hear about any other source, then we'll still believe that everything is B'dei Shamayim and that He can control and that He can change anything. And that we just have to cleave to God and that all is in His power. So that doesn't necessarily mean, though, that there isn't any meaning to it. So here's where there were those who took issue with the Rambam's position. And among them was the Vilna Gaon, very notably. And the Vilna Gaon, in his commentary to Yerideya, the Vilna Gaon said that he thinks that the Rambam was incorrect about this, and that the Rambam was misled by his studies in philosophy. And the cursed philosophy took him off the derech, and he was led to believe that these things don't exist. And to paraphrase Shakespeare, there are more things, Maimonides, in heaven and earth that are dreamt of in your philosophy. And the Gra says that all of the others already hit him over the head and already have proven him wrong about this. So this was one major machlokas about how to relate to the whole notion of all of these magical forces. Do we understand, like the Rambam understands, based on the Pasuk in this week's Parsha, that they are simply meaningless, and the Torah is telling us, don't believe in meaningless things, and don't practice meaningless things, and don't try to fool people by yourself engaging in these meaningless things. And others are not necessarily of the same opinion, that they are necessarily meaningless. It could be that there's something real to them, and we are prohibited to make use of them. It doesn't necessarily mean that the astrology column in the newspaper is real. It would mean that it could be that there is such a chachma to astrology, and that we say, Ein mazel Yisrael, that it's not for us, as the Gemara says, and as the Rashba has a whole truth about. It could mean that we are separate and apart for it, but it doesn't necessarily mean that everyone who claims to have this chachma is actually telling you the truth. And that's itself a discussion. So it could be that either together with these Yisroelim or separate from them, that somebody who's putting on a show may be in violation of some of these specific Yisroelim and may also be in violation of Gnevas Das, which is itself a whole sugya I'd like to try to get to sometime in the near future. But in addition to whatever Yisroelim are involved, if you are also fooling the public, so then that's its own level of prohibition, which is also mixed in with this. Let's try to identify some of the specific ideas. So we have the notion of kishuf, all these psukim in Parsha Shoftim that identify specific yisurim. So when it comes to kishuf, so here we saw that the Rambam believes that it's nothing. And other Rishonim, such as the Ramban and the Mikra Yosef to Sanhedrin Samechei and Mibbeis, was among those who disagreed. And the language of the Mikra Yosef is that Chachma Seif Staninus is Chachma Gedolahi, that it's something that really could be an actual weight to it and some actual meaning. But Gzeirah Shagazar Kadosh Baruch Hu Mishei Shmei Reishis LaHanig Olamo B'Kach. It's one of the things that God put in there in the system that is one of the systems that the world could work by. But it's not for the Jews. And Alzal Ken Yisbal Kol Chasa Levatman Gzeirah Samazel. So a Jew should pray to have such a relationship with God that he's not going to be subject to any of these forces. And it's positions like that among the Rishonim that led the Gra, like we said in his commentary to Yerideya, to say that these other Rishonim have taken positions against the Rambam. So the prohibition of Kishuf, according to those Rishonim, would be to practice sorcery, while the position of the Rambam would be to pretend to be a sorcerer. The Gemara in Yevamos and Daf Samechei Amud Aleph talks about the name Kishuf and Kshafim, and the Gemara talks about where that name comes from. It says Shemechachshim Famalia Shalmaila, and as the Rivash notes in a Tshuva in Siman Sadi Beis, so that language itself is a little bit ambiguous, because those letters Chaf Ches Shin Chachash could come from a language of like Chachasha, which could mean to contradict. So you're contradicting God by engaging in magic. Or it could mean to weaken, not that you're weakening God, but you're weakening God's influence by getting involved in this. So that itself is its own interesting investigation into what exactly is the intent of the language. So the Poskim, we talk about, Nostin Gishtetner has a truth about this, so once you start getting involved in these kinds of supernatural forces, so what about using Shemos? So to invoke Shem Hashem, let's say, to try to accomplish mystical things, is that an Isser? So the Shach writes, the name of Levush, that if you know how to use the Sefer Yetzirah to make things, so that's Shemos HaKodesh, so that you're allowed to do. And he writes that Hashem Yisbarach gave the power to certain people that who are righteous and maybe prophetic to be able to do that. And if somebody is able to carry out wondrous things with the Shem Hashem, so he is showing the Gedula and the Gvura of Hashem Yisbarach, as long as he gets involved with Kedusha and Tara, and for the purpose of Kedusha Hashem or for a big mitzvah. But nowadays we don't really find that, he writes. So nowadays it's not really recommended, but theoretically that wouldn't necessarily be an isser of kishuf. There's a testimony, and there's a whole literature about using a golem for a minion. It's its own interesting discussion about whether you can count a golem for a minion. So there's a tshuva about that. There's father and son tshuvas in the Sheilas Yavetz of Rabbi Yaakov Emden, and his father, the Chacham Tzvi, also has a tshuva about that. And he writes, I believe, that his grandfather did it. So I guess it depends how far back you want to go in order to find testimony about the creation of magical entities through Shem Hashem. But I guess even if that recently, there's still some discussion about it. I think nowadays we don't seem to know how to do this. So there is an Isser also of Kosein. And the Rambam describes that in Hilchos Avodah Zarah, there in Perek Yud Aleph, he has a number of different scenarios, and one of them is basically that you do certain activities that are for the purpose of fortune telling. Maybe you move around rocks or sand or other types of things, and you make funny sounds, or you look at metals, or you do all kinds of different things that give people the impression that you know the future. So that would be the violation of kosem, as he understood it. In modern Hebrew, they use kosem to mean a sorcerer. It's interesting that in a lot of these words, so you find they've taken on different meanings in modern Hebrew. Not 100% sure why. That's its own interesting discussion. So together with that, you also have the word nechush. So nechush in modern Hebrew means to guess, if I'm not mistaken. I guess that's what it means. And in halacha, so the way the Gemara, the Sigis, and the Sanhedrin, which explain a lot of these things, Sanhedrin and the Daf Samachay and Beis, so there the
Gemara... Nechush means a lot?
Sorry?
I'm losing the word.
Nechush. Nechush. So yeah. In modern Hebrew, they use it to mean to guess. I can't guess. But halachically, so the meaning is to be superstitious. So you're going to see something happen, and you're going to say, like the Gemara says, okay, my bread fell out of my mouth, or my stick fell from my hand, and therefore I'm going to make a decision based on that. And... there are other sugyas, the sugya in Chulin, Gemara's in a few places, which talk about that, that if a person makes a decision based on something that is completely disconnected or irrational, so then that is superstitious, and that's a violation of Nechush. And there is a somewhat controversial, I guess, Gemara, or in terms of how to interpret it, that the Gemara compares, in this context, the behavior of Eliezer, Eved Avram. And this, there's a lot to say about it. We'll see how much we'll mention now, because it could also take us a little bit far afield. But Eliezer, so we know we really should have a lot of Hakaras HaTov to, because all of our existence is due to his very successful plan, that he was asked to find the Shidduch for Yitzchak, and he came up with his test, that he would find a balas chesed, and he would see who would want to give water to him and to his camels. And it worked. So he found Rivka, and that was gevaldik, and look how beautiful a shidduch that was. And so we should all be very grateful to him for that. But there are two places in Chazal, at least, where they seem to criticize him for this. And one of them is this Gemara in Chulin, where the Gemara says, Kol nachash she'eino keliezer eved Avram eino nachash. That's apparently the standard for a nechush. And the Rambam brings that. The Rambam in Hilchos Akum, Perek Yud Aleph, Halacha Dalet, he brings that this is the standard of Eliezer. And the Ravid thinks he made a total mistake, and the Ravid says that that's not the point, that's not what the Gemara means. When it invokes Eliezer, he says that this is a terrible shibush, that what Eliezer did was totally mutter, and he just didn't know how to read the Gemara. He says he misunderstood the Lashon. But that's not, the Gemara also talks about Yonasan, another story in Tanakh, but that's not what he's talking about, that the Gemara is not saying as far as the prohibition. The Gemara is talking about the level of reliance, and how could you say that tzaddikim like this would be in violation of Nechush? Now, it's interesting, actually, because Eliezer actually wasn't technically Jewish, setting aside the question of whether Avram was Jewish, but Avram, okay, so we know, kept the whole Torah before it was given, but Eliezer wasn't even Avram. So it's an interesting question whether Bnei Noach are prohibited in these magical prohibitions. So is that the issue? Or should we assume that Eliezer, certainly acting on behalf of Avram, would have held to Abrahamic standards? But one way or another, here's the assumption the Rav is saying, how could you assume that a tzaddik like him would have violated this? But even separate from that, it seems hard to believe, because the whole notion of the Isser of Nechush is that it's irrational. And what Eliezer was doing was rational. He was looking for a balas chesed. So he set up a test of chesed. So why should that be so terrible? Why should that be a violation of superstition? He was looking for something that was rationally connected to what he was trying to find. So that's why it sounds like, from what the Ravid is saying, is that it's just trying to show you a standard of reliance, that in order to violate Nechush, you have to completely rely on the irrational signal, the same way that Eliezer relied on his rational signal. So he relied on this, and that shows you how much you would have to rely on the irrational signal in order to violate the Isser. But, of course, Eliezer himself, he didn't do anything wrong. Yes, other Rishonim have explanations like that. The Ran also has an explanation. Those are Machlokas Rishonim, whether the Gemara really means to criticize Eliezer. So separately, I won't take up the time with the Drush, although I think it's actually very important in practice. I'll just say quickly, parenthetically, I think it's still, even if you said like that, it still seems kind of funny, because, you know, even if that's what it means to hold up Eliezer as the poster boy for an Avera, even if he wasn't personally guilty, it's still not so flattering. It's like you want to teach Hilchos Shabbos. So you say, yeah, don't be Mechal Shabbos like that guy. You say, that guy, he's a tzaddik. No, what I mean is, what that guy did on Tuesday, don't do that on Shabbos. So it's still pretty offensive. So you still wouldn't want to be held up as the poster boy for Chil Shabbos, because you would do it better. So there seems to be some kind of implicit criticism anyway. And sometimes I have given the Musar Shmuzin based on this, that especially when you're trying to judge people in the context of dating or otherwise, that the assumption that there's a 100% correlation between any action and a midah is always a mistake, and that's bordering on superstition. That yes, you're looking for chesed, that's great, and a certain action seems to be highly correlated to chesed, so that's a good starting point, but to assume that there's a 100% correlation, that a nice person will always do this, and anyone who does this is a nice person, that's bordering on superstition. And it could be that this is a nice person who, for whatever reason, is not going to do this, and it could be that they are not a nice person and they are doing this for whatever reason, and maybe even that's why the Torah prohibits Lashon Hara, because even though you may be saying something true about a certain episode, but humans have a tendency to overinterpret the relationship between any one given action and the person's whole character. It's what the psychologists call the fundamental attribution error. And that is a mistake. And maybe that even deserves that criticism and is bordering on superstitious. So had Eliezer said, which is how some understand it, had Eliezer said, okay, this is a good first step. I see that she has a tendency towards nice activities. And then I'll look into a little further and see if the whole package is there, see if she's overall a Baal Chesed, even if we assume that that was the only meter to care about. So still, we're sure that that's really what's going on. So then, okay. But to assume that there's a 100% absolute correlation between your test and the midah, that was maybe inappropriate. But still, to call it absolute nechush, maybe that sounds like a bit much. So What we also have to clarify, just in terms of the details of Nechush, there are a lot of details, and indeed, so it does seem to be the case that you have to be completely dependent on that simin, and it's not just that together with a lot of other things, even though it may be foolish to count it at all, even with other things, but to violate the Isur Nechush, you have to be completely dependent on that. And also, sometimes, let's say a person flips a coin, the post can talk about, so you make a decision by flipping a coin, so that's not necessarily Nechush, because, or Nechush at all, because the person doesn't really think that, okay, heads is a sign from heaven that there's a certain correctness to that decision. You're trying to make a random decision, so you know that the coin toss is random, so that's what you're looking for. So that's not considered to be Nechush. Or, sometimes to get a little bit deeper, a person is looking to see what their actual subconscious desire is. So when they flip the coin, they'll know, are they disappointed or are they happy when they see the conclusion? So that's maybe a little more than that. But still, they don't actually think that there's any kind of meaning, whether it's heads or tails. So that doesn't make flipping the coin into an act of nechush. It's also significant, and it's important, because this we do find in some places in Chazal, and we practice on Rosh Hashanah, we call simanim. And the Gemara talks about that as simanim milsa. And the Gemara gives other examples that sometimes we have things that are there that are supposed to serve as a simin. So on Rosh Hashanah night at the meal, so we have certain food items that have either linguistic connection or other types of symbolic connection to positive things. And so that's called a simin, and that's not a nechush. So the idea is, for example, if you have a sweet apple, honey and apple, for a sweet year, and this is important to get right, because in the light of this Isser, that you're not thinking that, okay, I'm going to have a good year because I had a sweet honey apple on Rosh Hashanah night. It said on Rosh Hashanah, so you're davening for a sweet year. And it's easier to have a kavanadik davening when you're able to picture what you're davening for. So whatever will make your senses be more engaged in the process. So that is helpful to the intensity of your tefillah. But it's still your tefillah that's doing it. It's not the fact that you ate this food that is going to bring it about. And it's important to appreciate. So the Gemara says that they would anoint a new king by a river that has a powerful flow to it, and that the reign of this king, R-E-I-G-N, should be powerful like this flowing river. So it's not that they think that the river is going to do it, it's that the imagery that's going to be there of a powerful flowing river is going to be inspirational. So there was also a practice that is discussed in Shulchan Aruch, but specifically in Hilchos Kishuv, to explain that it's not necessarily a violation, depending on how you relate to it. And the later post can talk about this, the tshuva and the tshuvas of Yehuda Asad and others, that there's a notion of not getting married, called the choser halavana, in the second half of the month, when the moon is getting smaller. That's not a good time as much to get married, but better to get married on the first half of the month when the moon is getting bigger, miloy halavana. So the idea is not that it's really going to impact whether your marriage is successful or not based on what the moon is doing, but that it's an inspirational sign. So what the post can talk about, so let's say you have your wedding date planned for the second half of the month, and then you hear about this idea, and that means you're going to have to send out new invitations and cancel that date, and you're going to have to get a new hall, and you're going to lose your deposit, and you're going to have to cancel a new band because they're busy, and you're going to have to find a new kala because she's not happy about the changing of the date, and you're going to turn your whole life upside down in order to get this inspiration. So that's nechush. If you're going to put so much into it that you're really going to turn your life upside down in order to do it, so then that would be a violation of nechush. But if you're able to factor it in with other things, and you say, okay, and this is also an inspirational symbol, so then it wouldn't necessarily be a violation of Nechush. If it was Begeder Simen rather than Nechush, so then it's okay. But if it becomes that you actually believe that this is going to make or break the whole power of the marriage, so then that's a problem. And there could be other things that outweigh it also. So I personally, I spoke about this at my chasnas tish. I got married in Hanukkah, which is the later part of the month. But Hanukkah is its own symbol of Mosif Aholech and Ma'alim Mekodesh Ve'Maridin. So that's better than the beginning of the month. So I spoke about that in my chasnas tish. Now that's something that has its own power to it. But in any event, so to see it in context, is as a post can point out, that's what's really important, and to be able to appreciate that that's not what makes or breaks it. And it's also interesting, that expression, make or break, it's an English expression, but where does it come from? So what's the mucker for that expression, make or break? So that's a Mishnah in Rosh Hashanah, which makes this point also, that the Sukkim in the end of Parshas Beshalach tell us that when the Jewish people were at war with Amalek, so when Moshe Rabbeinu would hold his hands up, so then they would prevail. And when his hands were not up, so then the Jews were having a harder time in the Mochama. So the Mishnah has this expression in Hebrew. It says, V'chiyadav shel Moshe, osos Mochama, oshovros Mochama. What, that Moshe's hands make or break the war? Is that what you think? So no, it explains exactly like this. It says that when Moshe's hands were raised up, so then the Jewish people were thinking about God. Their hearts were mechuvanos l'shamayim, and then they would daven, and they would realize that God is in control of everything, and then they would do well. And when his hands were down, they would forget about it. So it's not that there's an actual power to hands being up or hands being down. That's exactly like the Mishnah spells out. That doesn't make or break things. But what does it is that if this inspires you to an actual sense of greater religiosity or greater accomplishment in other ways, so through the religiosity, so then that's worthwhile. But to think to put your belief that this is what's going to do it, so then that becomes nechesh, and that's an isser, and that's a serious problem. So there is a lot of discussion about the practicalities of this. It's interesting that Ramesh Sternbach has a tshuva about this, where he suggests that it might be kedai that you could look at what the astrologers say if your intention is to know that you want to appreciate what you can overcome, because a mazel Yisrael, so okay, now you'll know what the mazel would have had in store for you, and instead you will cleave even more to a Kodesh Baruch Hu, so then maybe that'll be an inspiration. So interesting mahalach. And when it comes to Gorolo, so here also, this is what the Sfarim write, it's a problem of Tam Tiyam Hashem Alekecha. The Gemara talks about, well, Gemara doesn't use this phrase, what was later known as the Garol HaGra. Gemara doesn't talk about the Gra, but the Gra was associated with the practice of taking a Chumash and flipping it a certain amount of times, and then landing on a Pasuk and using that Pasuk as some kind of direction. So that is based on concept that appears in the Gemara a few places, that they used to grab a yeshiva bachar is walking through the street when they needed some divine inspiration, and they'd say, "Psukli psukayich, tell me what pasuk you're learning today." And so he would say that pasuk, and that would be a way of getting a pasuk transmitted to you. And so that apparently has a mucker, as some kind of a connection to Kedusha. And that would be a connection to the divine word that does have some kind of a source to it. But, okay, so in the context of Nechush, you have a lot of different possibilities. You also have a prohibition called Ma'onen. Ma'onen, so that is, it's interesting, so this is what Ma'onein is, what a person tries to look like he's doing something astounding. That is what you might actually translate as sleight of hand. This is Ochez HaSeinayim, is the language that the Rambam uses. And you're doing a, the Rambam writes, you make people think that you're being Osa Maisa Timon. And really, you're not doing any such thing. So this is a important question as to whether this is a violation that applies to contemporary magicians. And this was a major discussion in Poskim. And without getting into all of the different Mahalchim, so there were those who were very machmir on this. It goes back to the Chayadim, who was very upset about some of the performances that he saw. He thought that was a violation both of Gnevis Das and of Moni, and others who felt that way. But there were others who thought it was Gnevis Das as well. There were others more recently who were more makel about it. Rav Moshe had a tshuva that was printed in one of the journals that was a little bit in between. The Klausenberger Rebbe has a tshuva about sleight of hand. He used language as Rizus Yadayim. And so, as some point out, that nowadays, so the language they even use, maybe it depends on who you're talking about, that the language some of them use specifically is illusionist. You're advertising that you are not trying to fool anyone, and you're saying that what you're doing is not real. And for many, it's overtly a intellectual exercise. And the whole point is it's really a puzzle that you're doing something that is meant to be clever, and your audience is challenged to figure out how you did it. So if you were to actually think that what they're doing was really sorcery, they'd be offended, because the whole point is that they came up with an intellectual way to trick you, and that you should appreciate that. So there's a good case to be made that that shouldn't be considered such a violation. Again, some poskim were more accepting of that, some poskim were less accepting about that, but it's certainly understandable where that comes from. Some religious magicians have a practice of explaining one trick. So it should be clear that they're all like that, and that they all have an explanation. You just can't necessarily figure out what it is, or you should feel challenged to figure out what it is. But that it should be clear that it was a trick. Some consider that maybe we should say, okay, so for adults, then it should be understood that it's all a trick. But maybe kids, they don't understand that. Maybe it's a problem to do such performances in front of kids. Rabbi Danny Rapp once pointed out that would then be a contradiction to the commercial, to say silly rabbit tricks aren't for kids. But even that, I don't know how young the kids would have to be literally fooled by that. And if they're that young, they probably don't even know that things aren't impossible. I don't know if that's really a meaningful chiluk, because my kids have never been that young that they can't tell that you're playing a game. So they started off that old that they were always able to figure it out. So I don't know if that's really a meaningful distinction. I mentioned, actually, remember I mentioned at the beginning, there's a chukas connection also. So many of the Mefarshim asked the question that why was it such a lack of a missed opportunity, such a missed opportunity for Kiddush Hashem that Moshe hit the rock instead of talking to the rock. But hitting the rock is not a physically real way of getting water out of it either. So they were both miraculous. Hitting the rock or talking to the rock, both would be miraculous ways of getting the water to come. So why was it less of a Kiddush Hashem that he hit the rock instead of talking to the rock? So I once heard someone suggest that in the eyes of the onlookers, so once you have physical contact, then people already think there's some kind of a trick. When there's no physical contact, so then that people think there's something magical going on. But once there's some kind of physical contact, so then they assume that there's some kind of a trick. So there was a big chiluk between touching it and not touching it. Nowadays, that's probably not true anymore. Nowadays, so with so many things that are done wirelessly, that I don't know if there would be much of a distinction, which is something that some science fiction writers pointed out, that any new science, before it's understood, is indistinguishable from magic. It's very hard to know when it crosses the line from magic into science, and the people will understand it well enough before you understand it. Science is magic, so it's a little bit subjective. But nowadays we're very used to things happening without any kind of physical contact. But once upon a time, so there was a big difference between physical contact and not. So even though they're both in Parshas Chukas, what happened there, it was, they were both equally miraculous. But once there was some kind of physical contact, the people were more skeptical about the whole thing. I remember seeing a few years ago, reading some of the tshuvas that some Rabbanim had written about what was known as energy healing, or consegrity. And there were many who were concerned that there was an aspect of kishuf there, which is an interesting question. And there's also a discussion, those who feel that there's a mamish pikuach nefesh involved, maybe pikuach nefesh is docha the yisakishuf, the whole discussion. So some of those who felt that there, but then there were those who were even thought it was even worse, who thought that it was of Israel de Vodazara, that it had roots in the Vodazara. So without getting into the details of that, but assuming that it was just an Isra Kishuf, so I saw some of the poskim who wrote about it, and they said that especially what makes it more Kishuftik is because there isn't any actual physical contact between the healer and the patient. So the assumption being that there's a big distinction when there isn't physical contact, that seems much more magical than otherwise. So that's the Parshas Chukas connection as well. Okay, so just to say a few more points about this, and then we'll wrap up. There's a lot more to do, but we can't magically go all night. So just to mention a few other points, there's also an Isser, Sho'olov Yidoni, V'darish al-Hamesim. So Sho'olov Yidoni actually means what you might think Darish al-Hamesim means. That Sho'olov Yidoni is trying to communicate with the dead. That as the Gemara talks about again over there in Sanhedrin on Samachem Beis, which is really what Darish al-Mesim sounds like. Darish al-Mesim actually a little different. The person fasts, starves himself, and then goes and lies in a cemetery and hopes that the Ruach Tuma will descend upon him. And both of these are specific prohibitions. And that's where it gets into a big discussion in general, what people do by Kvarim, and they have to be very careful. A person goes to a kever not to try to be actually tapping into the spirits, but rather understand that they are not asking for anything that would fall into this category. The Menachos Elazar has a tshuva about this, and there are, of course, within the literature of Chassidus, a big discussion about what is and isn't considered to be a violation about this. And before Chassidus, the Ran had in his drushes a discussion about this, which some have called the pre-Chassidic Ran. But the Menachos Elazar in his Tshuvas, he explains why going to give Ritzadikim and davening that they should be Melitza Yosher is not considered to be an Isser of either one of these. And he also suggests that there's also a aspect of going to a parent's kever of Kibbutz Av Aim as well. So he has his discussion about that. We'll also note that there was a literature about hypnotism, that Rav Moshe Feinstein had a tshuva about hypnotism, and in an earlier century there was a tshuva also of the Binyan Siyam, that Rabbi Yaakov Ettlinger, where they also talked about hypnotism. He talked about hypnotism just as it was becoming popular when it was called magnetism. That was the language that he used. No real connection to what we call magnetism today, but that was how it was referred to in its earlier days. Mesmer, someone who invented it, so it's called mesmerism, and the first called magnetism. And both Binyan Siyam and Rav Moshe both took the same attitude, that this is not the magic, this is a genuine science. And if you understand it as such, it's not a violation of any of these Yisurim. That's assuming that it's used for constructive purposes. Rav Soloveitchik was quoted as being very opposed to it being used for entertainment purposes, which he thought was shtus. Could take different attitudes. There may also be Kavod HaBrios violations, depending on how that is utilized. But when it's being utilized for therapeutic purposes, for medical purposes, so that's how Rav Moshe wrote, and the Binyan Siyam wrote, that this is not any kind of kishuf, this is a science, and this has been established as such. And it's effective in ways that are understandable, and wouldn't necessarily, or shouldn't be taken as a violation of that. So there's a lot more to say about how to understand some of these Yisurim, but we'll have to save some for later. Also, possibly a related topic is how to understand dreams and the power of dreams, which we find very mixed attitudes about, but we'll have to dream about speaking about that sometime in the future. And there are parshios which are fitting as a context for that, so we'll try to, Bez Hashem, find a good opportunity. I mentioned at the outset that next 2 weeks, I'm going to be traveling a little bit, and I'll be in different time zones, so it's going to be hard to find. I think maybe we might aim for Sunday next week if we want to do it live. And then the following week, I may have to do it recorded, but look out for the notification. I think we may try to aim for Sunday next week, and then we'll talk about what happens the week after. I wish everyone a wonderful Shabbos. It should be only good things. And God willing, I will see you soon. All right. Have a terrific night.
Wonderful.
You too. Yeah, it should be only good things.